Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt Harrington. I am your host, and we are going to be talking all about ABA research. In this podcast, we break down one ABA research article per episode, taking out the key findings for you so that on your morning commute or on your way into work, you can become a better behavior analyst. Now, let's get to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club podcast. My name is Matt. We are continuing our journey and our final three articles for the week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If you haven't been listening, you can go ahead and watch the past ones or the future ones on that schedule, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We're continuing on supervision. So these are our last three articles of the 12 that we're going to be tackling this month. So this article is by Denegri and colleagues, 2023. It is Behavior Analysis in Practice, titled A Multi-Level Framework for Compassionate Care in ABA Approaches to Cultivating a Nurturing System. Now, this off the bat does not really feel like a supervision article, but there's a couple sections that I think are really crucial in this article, and it's worthwhile to talk about from a supervision point of view. When we think about, or rather, I guess, in general, this article covers three different levels of care. There is the overarching kind of business perspective, the missions, kind of the OBM view of compassionate care. There is the clinician side of it. And then there is the pro-social kind of cultural technician side of the equation. And while we are going to be primarily focusing on the supervisor's behavior, it is crucial to also consider these other factors when you're creating a compassionate and really strong supervision environment for not only yourself to be a supervisor in, but also the supervisees you're training. So we're going to be exploring this topic pretty in depth. This is a great article. I really encourage you to dive into it. Whether you're a behavior technician or an owner, this is a really good article to get you thinking about how you can become a more compassionate BCBA or owner or behavior technician. So the reality is, despite our strong evidence base in ABA, despite the fact that we are able to provide really good outcomes for the folks that we serve, there's a lot of scrutiny on ABA, and a lot of it is rightfully earned. And I say earned specifically because there are things that have happened in ABA's past, and there are things that are currently happening today in ABA that has gotten a lot of scrutiny from both people inside and outside the autistic community. That stuff doesn't go away. There is no PR branding to just wait for things to fade. We actually need to accept the criticisms and move to doing something different. And compassionate care is one of the things that we can shift to in order to start doing things better and avoid this bad image and bad practice that ABA has been seeped in for quite a while now. I've been in ABA for about 11 to 12 years now. And there were situations like day one when these things were being brought up, and it's only gotten louder. Right. Now, do I think that ABA as a practice has gotten worse over the last 11 years? No. I think if you were to ask any BCBA 10 years ago what their beliefs were, what their values were, how they would define assent-based care, how would they practice, and you objectively compare that to an average BCBA today, I would say that the average BCBA is a stronger, better practitioner, more compassionate care-based BCBA. However, that doesn't change the fact that there are extremes on the low end that are still giving our field a bad name. Now, before we go any further, let's take a deep breath. Let's all expel out the marketing buzzword, the compassionate, the assent-based care. There are so many companies who are using buzzwords like this to just get more people, new hires, right? Oh, we're compassionate care, we're ethical-based, we're assent-based care. You don't have to worry about a thing when you work with us. Like, we're with you 100%. Well, let's take a break and let's look at compassionate care, not as a way to get a new employee, right? But simply as what it is, which is a different framework and a different path to take when solving the same problems that we've always been having to solve. Compassionate care, in my opinion, is just a little bit of a more winding road to get to the end result. Now, we could go back and forth on what takes longer, compassionate or assent-based care versus more traditional, quote unquote, like hard style extinction practices. I would tell you that assent-based care and compassionate care go faster, but that's not the point that I'm trying to make here. I want us to consider the fact that assent-based ABA
is just a different way of doing ABA, some slight tweaks, some different frameworks, instead of this marketing buzzword that we immediately shift off and push away and say, oh, that's just something that the big private equity companies say so they can get people to work there. We know why ascent-based care, compassionate care matters, but let's look at it more from only why it matters to the learner, but also why it matters to the others in the organization. So from a business perspective, compassionate care typically leads to more satisfied consumers. If, of course, the outcomes are strong, then the route you take to get to the outcomes matters as well. For example, if the goal is zero instances of self-injury and one route takes 3 months and there's a lot of extinction, there's lots of resurgence, there's lots of spontaneous recovery, and there's lots of response block, and there's all of this really tough things that are happening, hard intervention component, and the outcome is zero instances of self-injury, many consumers would say that they're extremely satisfied with that option. In another version, right, if it, let's say it takes 2 months, or even if it was the same, it takes 3 months, and the route there is different, there's more fading, there's more shaping, there's less hard style lines, there's more caregiver training, all those things that we would somewhat associate with compassionate care. If the end result is still zero instances of severe behavior, I would argue that most people would rank both are amazing. We prefer one over the other. So if there is a preference for one over the other, then that means that the people, when they leave with their satisfied outcomes, are more likely to recommend that other people come to your clinic. This is referral word of mouth style marketing. So from a business perspective, if your consumers are extremely happy, your clients are happy, your caregivers are happy, that's just going to make your business stronger because you're going to get more people coming in your door to then receive those same amazing outcomes.
80 CEUs, $10 a month, 3 to 5 new CEUs being added every single month. Straightforward, simple, that's CEU Streamline. I created the Netflix of CEUs with all of not only my old content, but 3 to 5 new hours of CEUs being added every single month. Right now we're at 85 videos and climbing more and more with over 400 behavior analysts getting all of the CEUs they could dream about for only $10 a month. So if you're interested, go ahead and go to behavioristbookclub.com and click the link that says Streamline Info or check the link below this episode. I know that you will love it and I guarantee you that you will get all the CEUs you need at finally an affordable price.
Now, what about from the supervisor level? So your average BCBA, I think there's two main things that I experienced when I switched to a more compassionate ABA method. The first one was that there were less fires. Now, this varies, and there are definitely still fires that you have to put out when you're a BCBA. But when you switch to more of the ascent base, when you train your technicians to easily step away, to allow a lot of room for reinforcement, to go a little bit slower, then oftentimes what that means is that there's less power dynamic plays. There's less, you need to do this, or we can't move to the next thing. And when you take away that little piece, what you end up with is a situation where you're not having to constantly get called over one again, can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? So I actually experienced a lot more calmness and stability in my role because my technicians knew that they had the time to give me a call or text me when something went wrong, because something going wrong was just not getting enough trials done, right? It wasn't a full-on extinction burst, etc. The other thing I experienced was my social validity. was much easier to maintain. There was much less, oh, just hang with me, it's going to get a lot better, because things were already moving well. Now, there were times when the caregivers felt they were moving too slowly, and that's totally valid, and we talked about those moments. But overall, it was a simpler process of point A to point B, because we were progressing consistently and there just wasn't as much aggressive noise. It wasn't as much spontaneous problem behavior. Now, the third way that compassionate care really changes the world that you're living in as an employee is at the behavior technician level. I already alluded to this, but the ability to avoid those big power dynamics is super crucial. The ability to step away and just let things play out, let the person return to a more regulated state, and then resume trials after that, is a really significant, powerful moment it also, as long as your outcomes are good, it's going to lead to a lot more retention. You're going to enjoy your life more if you're engaging in passionate care ABA, because generally speaking, the client's going to be happier, there's going to be less instances of problem behavior, and your outcomes are still going to maintain. Now, this article doesn't cover the exact way you get solid outcomes with compassionate care. That'll be a future series of podcast episodes, probably a boot camp, to be honest. We're just focusing on the end result here. Now, let's look at what this article proposes for a framework that we can apply to each and every level. So at the business level, they spoke about organizational behavior management, right? Sharing workplace systems to create situations where everyone is always trained, everyone is always supported, and there is reinforcement applied to your workplace behaviors, not just in the form of a twice a month paycheck, but actually consistently throughout the scenario. That means better supervision. That means more feedback. That means more visible data. That means more training. It's all things that the organization can do to support those lower in the organization. At the supervisor level, it's worth having an understanding of contextual behavior science, right? Acceptance and commitment training. This is used to help target private events, not only you personally, but also in those trainees, in those supervisees, and the clients that you're working with. A beginner understanding of ACT that then leads to a more advanced understanding as you practice is really important when you're supervising. What happens when you're supervising somebody and when you're going through that process is that you're essentially saying, where you're trying to get to, I'm going to lead you there. And all those things in the way, whether they be educational or whether they be covert, rule-governed thoughts and things that get in the way, these are all things that I'm going to remove. You can spend all your time educating, all your time teaching, but they're going to sit down at the test and they're still going to have coercive thoughts that sound a lot like this. There's no way I could ever be a BCBA because I just don't know what I'm doing. There's too much information. I'll never memorize it all. Those are all thoughts that give them no service, but live in their head anyways. And as a supervisor, being able to notice and recognize those thoughts and then help somebody work their way through it using ACT is crucial. And what it's going to do is it's going to prepare them to then do the same thing with their trainees, right? So if you are able to give somebody not just the education, but also the psychological flexibility, then they can do the same thing to their next trainee and their next trainee and so on. And finally, moving below, they spoke about pro-social design, specifically a cooperative and equitable system based on Ostrom's core design principles. Now, pro-social is a whole topic in and of itself. I actually have a CEU and CEU Streamline by Jason Stauffer. He goes over the basics of pro-social, and we're doing a part two soon. So that's a really good episode to check out. If you're in CEU Streamline, you can get there by any of my links. It's at the top of my website, behavioristbookclub.com. You can check out that CEU right now and get it. It's a really good one. Okay, so let's look at some things that can change at each level past the framework. At the leadership level, there are things like behavioral system analyses, PDCHS assessments to assess where people need training and what kind of support they need. You can embed policies that support staff psychological flexibility, get continuous feedback, use pro-social assessment. There's a lot of things organizationally that can be done that trickle down across the entire organization. The key here is that the assessments that you're doing and the findings you get actually result in a change in the actual policies of the company. If you have a situation where there's a bunch of assessment, there's a bunch of learning, and then nothing actually changes, that's just going to frustrate your staff even more. There was nothing more frustrating than taking an anonymous survey and then nothing ever changing. At the supervisory level, we're going to look at supervisors modeling compassion, empathy, perspective taking, and supportive feedback, modeling some of those ACT skills like psychological flexibility, moving into things like acceptance, diffusion, etc. What this looks like when you're actually sitting next to somebody in supervision is hearing what they're saying and then engaging in those behaviors to them and then pointing out, hey, the same way I did this with you, these are ways that you can do it with your client. Soft skills, there's existing curriculums out there like the SHAPE and ACT-based supervision, but all those soft skills are crucial here. Like I said, the more we can model these skills in every single supervision we provide, the 10 times better it's going to be when we need to rely on our supervisees, now supervisors, doing it to the rest of the staff as well. And finally, at the direct therapist level, there's lots of active teaching and reinforcing the soft skills, the compassionate behaviors with group coaching, group training, one-on-one feedback, just as you would do behavioral skills training. Now, the other thing they pointed out that I thought was really interesting was the brief exercises. There's a decent amount of research in this where brief ACT exercises can change the way somebody views their day-to-day job. Like, I think there was one article where 15 minutes before clients came in, there was like a brief exercise where they did some noticing and some acceptance. And that really changed the way that the day went for these people. And so I think that's something that we'll continue to get more research on, and it'll be really interesting as we progress. So we're just about at the end of our time. I think the key takeaways for this article for me is that compassion isn't some soft marketing buzzwords. It's actually very strategic and something that you have to invest into. All of these things we talked about is going to take time away from the all-important billable hours, whether you're doing it at an organizational level, at the supervisee level, or at the supervisor level, or the supervisee. The key here is that you're making space in your day for these practices so that you get the snowball rolling. So you get the process of everyone engaging in these compassionate cares happening as soon as possible so that the results and the downstream effects can happen. And then they pay off, like I said, with a better business, with better retention, with less client churn, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, I hope you enjoyed this one. I always love talking about this stuff. It deserves a whole series in and of itself, and we will get there eventually, I promise. But I hope you also see as a supervisor how crucial it is to establish these systems in place now so that your supervisees are prepared when they take the test and then go off on their own as well. Okay, I'll see you in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I hope you learned something, and I hope you continue to learn something as you tune in Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to the Behaviorist Book Club. If you like this episode, consider leaving us a review, sharing it with a friend, and most importantly, using it in your clinical practice. There's no other reason why I do this than to make you a better behavior analyst and to make myself a better clinician. See you in the next one.